Hi, Jonathan.
Hello, mate.
How are you doing?
I'm right.
Good, good.
You?
Yeah, not too bad. Kind of a bit bizarre, this.
I'm kind of used to it now.
I'm sure you are, yeah.
This will be my 12th. No, actually 11th.
Really? Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks for agreeing to chat.
Yeah, no problem.
That's much appreciated. And yeah, I'd just like to talk to you about your, you know, Visionary Hours project and Preserve Sounds. But before that, I wanted to ask about Hebden, because you've recently moved there, haven't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
What made you choose that, Hebden Bridge?
Well, I've lived abroad for going on for 20 years.
Yeah.
And I'm originally from Shipley. And four years ago, we had a little girl that was born, and it was time for grandparents. And so my partner and I just decided to move back to the UK, and we thought, Okay. Well, after 20 years, where do you go? So we kind of shopped around a bit and looked around, and I knew about Hebden and just thought, well, we'll give Hebden a go. So back in August, we moved back to Hebden.
Yeah. How are you finding it then?
Yeah, good. I mean, I did a lot of research about where to go, and I kind of knew that the Calder Valley was a place that I could see myself living in. My partner's from near Bristol, and we also looked down there. We considered Sheffield, and in the end, we just thought, well, we've come from a big city. We don't want to go back to a big city. Let's try a small town, but hopefully with a kind of wider mentality, or a sort of more alternative mentality, which I think Hebden has. So it's only been a month, and but so far so good. Yeah.
So have you got enough room where you live now for recording more music, or what are your plans for that?
Well, you know Hebden, you probably know Hebden well. I know
yeah,
the house.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a room. I have a room, and I've got my little studio set up here.
Yeah.
To be honest, I haven't done a lot of music in the last few months just because of preparing for the move. But once I get everything set up, I'll be back. I've got a new album ready to master, actually.
Yeah.
Which you're on, in fact.
Okay.
With Sly and the Unseen. The Sly and the Unseen. So I've got that ready to master, and that'll probably come out next year. But I'm putting together also ideas for an album after that as well. So trying to keep one step ahead.
Okay. And are you going to carry on running Preserve Sound from that?
Yeah, well? Preserve Sound kind of goes wherever I do, really. So we've got a new release coming out tomorrow. Friday the 23rd, which is a re-release of an album that you put out of mine on your Hibernate label, which I decided to re-release, mainly because I got people asking for it. So yeah. I thought, well, why not start the label in Hebden Bridge with my own album?
Why not?
Yeah,
it did sell out very quick on Hibernate, as I remember.
Yeah, it sold out really quick, and I think people kind of wanted. Well, there's a few people, you know, kind of contacted and said that it was a shame it'd gone, and was I planning to re-release it? So I thought, well, yes, yeah, give it a go.
Best wishes and good luck with it. So yeah,
thank you, and thanks for putting it originally, and for Kate for doing the artwork.
That's right.
So get a couple of copies in the post to you.
So Visionary Hours, how did it start off then?
That's a really interesting question. I never really set out to write instrumental music.
Mm.
For my sins, I'm a singer-songwriter originally, and I kind of got a bit bored of doing singer-songwriter stuff. And in the process of making one of my singer-songwriter albums, I was using quite a lot of instruments. I play clarinet. My partner plays flute.
Okay.
And I'd put down a few clarinet parts and flute parts. And when I came to mix it, I often mix with a friend of mine called Richard Formby, who kind of uses a lot of tape effects and tape echo. And after the mixing session, I was able to take the files that some of the tracks that he'd kind of put through Tape Echo. I took those away as individual WAV files. And I just was playing with them one day and opened them up and started playing with them. I started reversing them. Mm. Some of them had been sped up because it was on a Revox B77. So when you do the tape echo, you can slow it down and speed it up. Mm. And I just started playing with some of these tracks and looping sections of them, cutting them and looping sections with them. It kind of came hand in hand with me learning how to use Logic. And started just playing with them, really, and I kind of started just getting interested in this kind of music that people were putting out there. You know, there was some of the earlier albums by Johan Johansson, and I saw him live at the Unsound Festival in Krakow, and he was you know, looping quite a lot of sections of music. He was playing with a sort of a symphony and recording that and then sort of looping it back on itself live. And I suppose I was kind of inspired by that live show and thought, you know, I'd give it a go with some of these files. And so that's how the Visionary Hours project came about, really.
Okay. So you've now what? How many albums have you got? Was it four? Five?
Well, the one you released is the third album.
Okay.
I've got a couple of other unreleased things, which were perhaps early stuff, which, you know, maybe they'll see the light of day. They're on my Bandcamp page, but I haven't released them officially because I think it was more about me finding my way in instrumental music, I suppose. So this is my third album.
Okay.
And then the fourth one I'll release, as I said, next year.
Are you going to self-release that, or is that going to come out on any label? Any plans for that?
Good question, really. I mean, I've given it a lot of thought, and I mean, it's always great for artists to release on other people's labels.
Mm.
I think it's good to build up your kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, release roster of different labels that you've released on. So it would be great if it came out on another label. And I have contacted a couple, not too much success, I have to say. I'd quite like to do it on vinyl as well, although it's pretty expensive.
It is.
I know that I won't make my costs back probably, but I kind of just quite like the idea of thinking, well, this is my album, I'll release it on vinyl and see whether I can make a vinyl release work. Mm-hmm. Rather than doing it with someone else's album, do it with my own. We'll see. It may end up just coming out on CD on my own label. We'll wait and see.
So getting back to Richard Formby.
Yeah.
So you've been friends with him for quite some time, have you?
Yeah, I've been in the early 90s. I was in an indie band, and we ended up doing some recording sessions with Richard.
Okay.
And I kind of just kept in touch with him after those sessions. The band didn't do anything, and I just ended up working with him on. I was pretty green to recording, and ended up sort of going into the studio in Leeds and recording some stuff and just carried on from there. And then when I lived abroad, I'd kind of come back and do bits of recording with him. So, so he's kind of always worked. I've always worked with him on my stuff, and I really like his. I really like his approach to music, and I really like his ears, strangely enough, because they kind of. Certain filters on that filter out the sounds that perhaps I would stress about and the kinds of things I would stress about in a mix or a recording, he kind of filters out and gives me the confidence to go with what we've got.
Yeah. So is he working on your works? Has he worked on your new album then?
Yeah, he mixed it.
Okay.
He mixed it, and that's an interesting thing, really, because I always credit Richard as rather than just mixing it as a musician on the album, despite the fact that, you know, ultimately when you're mixing, you're balancing tracks. You know, if you're producing, I suppose you're working on sounds and creating sounds. You know, he's mixed it, but he's also added sort of tape effect. Mm. And I kind of sort of regard it as an instrument, really. Because obviously it changes the sound and does strange things. So I sent him some rough mixes, kind of showing him kind of what I wanted, and he kind of mixed it for me.
Okay. So is there any plans for live gigs at all with Visionary Hours? Is that even possible?
I've been thinking about that, and haven't quite got it together yet.
Because obviously you're in an ideal place for live gigs now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a few, like where we went to gigs to get a gig together at Fuse in Bradford and stuff.
Yeah.
I've got to say, I mean, I haven't got a lot of time these days, with having children and things like that, but I would like to. I just haven't quite worked out how I would do it and what I would do. I think my live experience would have to be a completely different, completely different beast to my albums. I just don't know how I would actually do those albums live as they are on the CDs, which I suppose is a good thing, but I think maybe the new album would lend itself more to being played live, because it's the new album is a collection of acoustic guitar tracks, with certain overdubs. So I think I could probably use that and use a loop pedal to introduce new sounds, volume pedals to kind of introduce different sounds to sew the tracks together. So possibly.
You should give it a go, I think.
Yeah, you've always encouraged me, so thank you.
I mean, it opens up, when you're doing things live, it opens up a new world, you know, and you think completely differently, you know.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, I've played live for years. I mean, I was in a band, and then I was kind of played solo. And I have actually done a Visionary Hours gig. The first album I released, Road to Basho, we did do a live version of it. It was with a friend of mine, and basically we took the files that were on the album, and I mixed them live, and he added live instruments on the top, and we did it to a film. And we played it in Poland, where I used to live, and took it to Kiev in Ukraine as well. So we did play that live, but subsequent albums, I'm not sure. Footfalls Echo, which came out on your label, which is coming out on Preserve Sound tomorrow, I would have difficulty doing, I think, live.
Fair enough. Getting back to Preserve Sound, actually, what's coming up after Footfalls Echo?
Yeah, we've got quite a few things coming up. Got an album by a Italian duo who kind of a guitar player and a drummer who haven't played together for 14 years and suddenly got into the studio and kind of improvised again drum and bass session, but kind of more in the sort of tortoise vein. When I got in touch with them and they sent me the album, it was just really interesting. It was something that I really liked, because it's not really a rock album, but it's not really an ambient album. It's just a kind of a live, mellow guitar and drum experience, I suppose. Mm. I mean, I think Tortoise is the nearest thing you could probably say it sounds like, because it sounds quite live and so that's coming out in October. And then, I've got a Russian artist from St. Petersburg called Max Ananyev, who's releasing his new album called Communication, which is a real stunner, I think, a real fantastic album. There you can find sort of samples of both of those albums on the website, on Preserve Sound website. And then sort of moving towards the end of the year, probably got another album from an artist, an American artist called Poppy No Good, who we released his first album, Music for Mourning, back in May. And looks like I'll have an album from Aaron Martin as well.
Blimey. It's quite a lineup then.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite busy. So that'll take us into next year, I'm sure.
So do you get in touch with the artists on the label, or is it that they submit demos to you? How does that work?
Well, it's both, really. I mean, when I started the label, it was very much artists got in touch, and if we liked something, we kind of released it. And I suppose a lot of labels start like that, and then they become a bit more picky. These days, I mean, I'm quite loyal to our artists, you know. And so, for example, Poppy No Good released an album in May, and he's going to release a new one with us. I mean, I really like his new album, and that's why I'll release it. Adrian Lane, he's now onto his third album with us. Tess Said So, they're onto their second album. So I quite like this idea of building up a roster of artists. But then it's always great to get demos and hear new things, because with the best will in the world, you can't be listening to everything. So it's just a question of things coming in and thinking to yourself, well, do you see them as a long term, you know, preserved sound artist? Are they an artist you could see long term on the label? And if the answer is yes, then I'll probably look into releasing it.
So I always thought the idea for a preserved sound was that, you know, that there was, you're going to preserve that music forever. Either, you know, on...
That's what it says on the website.
Is that what you had in mind for it at all, or...?
In what way, preserve it forever?
Well, I don't know whether it's going to be always available, you know, that you'll always have it available for people to purchase, or, you know, that kind of thing.
No, I don't think we'd keep re-releasing albums. In fact, this Footfall's Echo is the first one we'll have re-released. No, I don't think it's a question of keeping them on the label. I mean, a lot of labels like to I mean, their aim is to sell out, you know.
Exactly.
And I respect that, and I really like that. In many ways, you know, and if you're releasing 20 copies or 40 copies, maybe it's not so difficult to sell out. But at the same time, you know, I mean, I know for me, when I find new music on the web, and I kind of go to the label and think, oh, I'll buy that album, and it's not available, I get kind of annoyed and think, why can't I buy that label? It's because they only release 50 copies, or they only release 75 copies. And it seems a shame, and I think, I mean, personally, for my own music, I would like people to be able to buy it in a physical format.
A lot of artists do, and then a lot of labels see selling out as a success, don't they? Whereas the artist wants their music to be available.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it's going to be a balance between the two.
Yeah.
Because there is no question that, you know, if you sell out, then it's a success. But if you're only releasing a handful of copies, then, you know, how much of a success is that?
Yeah.
You know, I think it needs to be a happy balance, really. Actually, you know, I've never really had that conversation with any of our artists about you know, whether they want their album to sell out or not. I mean, you know, I have conversations with artists when albums do sell out and they want to re-release it because they feel there's more life in it, and it's kind of quite tough to say no. Let's leave it. Let's let it lie and let's see how it goes. But you know, I personally like to have my albums available, at least something available.
Yeah.
So I think it needs to be some kind of happy balance.
does the format bother you? Does it have to be available on a CD, or are you happy with it being you know, a digital download or...
The thing is, I'm just not a digital download kind of person. And I think that's you know, seeped over into the label and how I run the label. Because
you're an old man now, though, aren't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had this conversation with Richard Formby. I mean, he said, yeah, I'd love to just do a vinyl-only label, you know. It's great. I'd love to do that. You know, if I had the money to do that, I'd do it tomorrow. But, you know, being realistic, a lot of the artists that we release are not particularly well-known artists. And I guess it's my job to try and make them more well-known and have the faith in them to say, yes, we will try and make you better known. But I personally like having the option to buy a physical copy. I don't really buy downloads.
What about tapes or other formats? Like the other day we were talking to Shimmy Moods and, you know, they were on about USBs.
Yeah. Have you ever listened to music from a USB?
No, I haven't. It can't be any different than listening to it on a PC, can it?
I just don't think I'd get the satisfaction of putting the USB stick in the computer to listen to it. I've seen music released on floppy disk as well, you know, the old floppy disks. And I quite like that because there's kind of a funny factor to it that, you know, only people who've got old computers can actually, you know, play these, put these floppy disks into their machine and listen to the music. And I suppose that's what will happen to the CD. Or will it? Oh, who knows?
Probably. I'd have thought so. I mean, it's going that way, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, Apple creating computers now with no CD drives.
Yep.
So...
And even now, the iPhone doesn't have a headphone jack.
Headphone jack, yeah. So, yeah. I mean, this is Apple trying to make more money, probably. But, I just don't get a lot of satisfaction. I don't get a lot of satisfaction from listening to downloads.
Mm.
Maybe it's the way I listen to music, and obviously the reality is that most people listen to their music on their phones and stuff like that and through Spotify, but I just don't get satisfaction from it. I have to really put at least a CD in the machine to listen to it on a hi-fi. If I'm at work, I listen to stuff on headphones.
Mm.
And Bandcamp and SoundCloud are great for that, but I just don't buy downloads.
Fair enough. Well, thanks ever so much, Hayden, for chatting to us.
Absolutely no problem.